Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to another Thursday night here at Dragon Talk Radio. I'm John Clement, author of the Velocity Girl series of novels, the Smurt webcomic, and Smurt children's books. The Smurtiverse is a world of costumed heroes based around the St. Louis area where I live. As an author, I travel to conventions for sci-fi, comic books, fantasy, anime, manga, and gaming. The goal here at Dragon Talk Radio is to bring you vicariously with me on my convention circuit. To that end, each week I bring you a different author, game designer, artist, or other fascinating creator from the beloved worlds of fantasy, sci-fi, comics, and anime that we all know and love. My website is www.smurtiverse.com, S-M-E-R-D-I-V-E-R-S-E.com.
And tonight, here on Dragon Talk Radio, we bring you the return of Stephen Zimmer. He's going to be with us tonight. His new book, The Storm Guardians, just came out. And there's a lot of activity here at the Dragon Talk Radio Studios, a little more than usual, because next week, the production office, we're going to be coming to you live from Gen Con. Truly, I have myself, I have next guest, Nick Valentino, will be in Authors Out with me. I didn't plan that. It would be so cool, and I'd be extra genius if I planned it, but I didn't plan it. It just worked out that way. Nick Valentino, who has written Thomas Riley, a steampunk adventure par excellence, he's just gotten back from San Diego Comic-Con. He's just gotten back from Convergence. He'll have a lot of stuff to share with us next week about his adventures this summer. So speaking of this summer, we've had a great summer with conventions so far. So let's go ahead and get into the conventions that we've had recently, look at the convention calendar to kind of finish out the summer, get into the fall, and get rolling with Stephen and our new co-host. This is the second show for Wei He. Hi, Wei. Wei, you with us tonight? Looks like Wei might be having a bit of studio problems there. Hello, Wei.
Hello.
Yeah, there we go. Hey, Wei.
Hi, John. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem, no problem. We know all about technical difficulties here at Dragon Talk Radio. So does our audience if they're still listening. So,
great to be back.
That's just life. The internet enables us to do some amazing things, but just like any other piece of technology, sometimes it can be a little frustrating. But I still like the world better with the internet than before. All right. So the convention calendar then, coming up this Saturday in just a couple of days, on July 31st in St. Louis, the GEA will be having their July Game Day. You can find out more about it at GameClubHQ.com. That's GameClubHQ.com. GEA stands for the Gaming and Entertainment Agency. And they once a month, they have a one-day mid-convention somewhere in the St. Louis area. This month, they will be having it in the Crestwood Courts Mall in the Crestwood area of the St. Louis Metroplex, in front of Yeti Games. Yeti Games is an incredible little establishment, mostly dedicated to collectible card games, although there's a few other game products you can find there on occasion. Yeti Games is just a hub of card game activity. They have lots of tournaments there all the time. Just a real great place to bring your cards if you're into that sort of thing. And there'll be all kinds of gaming there this Saturday. The GEA will be gaming all day long. There'll be card games, of course, but there'll also be miniature games, role-playing games, just any kind of game you can possibly imagine. And that's this Saturday at the Crestwood Courts Mall in Crestwood, Missouri, in the St. Louis Metroplex. Then next week, I've already kind of mentioned, we're going to Gen Con. If you need a website for Gen Con, it's pretty easy. It's gencon.com, GENCON.com. I'll have a table at Author's Alley, and Gen Con, I think their own slogan sums it up. They call themselves the best 4 days in gaming. I really can't argue with that. I think that's pretty accurate. So Gen Con, of course, is the biggest con that's dedicated primarily to the gaming industry, I think, in the world. I think there might be a few bigger conventions that are maybe comic book conventions or different types of conventions, but I think Gen Con is the king of the gaming conventions. Then later on this fall, we're going to have Archon. And Archon, of course, is St. Louis's pride and joy, the biggest convention we've got going here in St. Louis. And St. Louis is pretty much become a convention town lately. This year, I think about half the conventions we've gone to here at Dragon Talk Radio, your convention connection, have been right here in St. Louis. And, of course, one of the things that Archon is most famous for is its masquerade. And Wei can definitely tell us a little bit about costuming a masquerade. That is her day. Have you heard about Masquerade Ways? I know they're moving to Westport this year. Archon is changing locations as we've kind of worked with Dragon Talk. Has there been any release of information? Have they told anybody anything about how this year's Masquerade is going to be different?
Actually, not at all. I don't know how big the Masquerade room will be this year. I'm actually kind of nervous about that. There's no information leaked.
Okay, well, we'll see if we can correct that, because I know that some of the folks on the Archon staff are bending schedules and moving schedules around, so that we're going to get some of them here on Dragon Talk Radio here pretty soon, so that we can, here at Dragon Talk Radio, your convention connection, we want to be able to be part of the education for the public about the new Archon, so that people can know what to expect and what's what, and, maybe at a new location, there may be a few new rules for the new location, but I think most of us here in the St. Louis con world, we want to get back to enjoying the good old Archon as soon as possible. All right. So, and then, of course, in November, there's TeslaCon. We've got a special show here in the archive at Dragon Talk Radio about TeslaCon. It's a total steampunk immersion convention the first weekend of November. The GEA has their convention that's more than just their little one-day mini-con. They have their big convention for the year. It's called Temporal Con. So you can find out about all these things on their websites. GEA, of course, is GameClubHQ.com. TeslaCon, the Total Immersion Steampunk Convention, is at TeslaCon.org. That's TeslaCon.org. And Archon, of course, is ArchonSTL.org/34. This will be the 34th Archon. And Archon is spelled ArchonSTL. So ArchonSTL.org/34. All right. So there's it's been a great spring and summer so far. There's still more good conventions to come. And one of the guys that I keep seeing at conventions over and over again, driving here, doing all kinds of things, is Stephen. So welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, good to be back for the Encore show.
So you've been busy. I mean, one of the things that that I'm not sure people necessarily know about you that I was really impressed with the last time that Steve and I were together, folks, was this past DuckCon 19, and I drove from St. Louis to Chicago for DuckCon. And then I'm going back to St. Louis, and that's kind of enough of a road trip for me, to drive in the car for a weekend. But Steve, after DuckCon, was headed to Iowa, and he was on the road for days after I was. And so he's a road warrior, folks. If you don't know that about Steve, he is a road warrior. So where all do you how many miles are you putting in, Steve? Where all are you going? I mean, I don't think this is necessarily something that people necessarily know about you.
Well, if you call me a road warrior, I don't travel in a souped-up, car with a double-barreled shotgun and, leather clothing and a dog, like Mad Max. But it's not quite that fancy. But, the Ford Taurus does put on a few miles. And, I hit primarily in the, dipping into the west, midwest, and south-southeast kind of region. That's primarily where I've been going lately. Iowa's probably the furthest west that I've pushed, but everywhere from Chicago, St. Louis, Tennessee, West Virginia, Ohio, all these kind of surrounding states around, where Kentucky is.
So about how many shows are you doing? About how many shows are you doing per month or per year?
Well, it got to a real run there where I did about six or seven, you know, weeks in a, out of eight, I was pretty much on the road. But of course, there's also some bookstore events mixed in with cons. And a few months I actually had about three conventions. Since this coming month, I have two. I have the Fright Night Film Fest in Louisville, which is actually a full con. They've got, you know, great programming, dealers' rooms, all that kind of stuff, art show. And then I'm also going to Context, which is more of a literary-oriented convention, and that's up in Columbus. So that's pretty normal for me to do about two a month.
Yeah, well, I think that's pretty aggressive because, I mean, I tend to do one to two a month, and people tell me I have an aggressive con circuit, but that's kind of how Dragon Talk Radio got started. But and one thing that I have heard, of course, from people who are you know, even more veteran than we are in the convention lifestyle, I guess you could say, that it is possible to burn out on conventions. I believe them, but I look forward to finding out for myself.
Yes.
To me, a perfect world would have a convention every weekend.
You can about do that now. It seems like there is a convention somewhere every weekend.
Right. They're just about somewhere. It's just whether or not you want to go. So let's get to talking about your books here, because you have a new book that's out, Storm Guardians, and you've got two series, one that's kind of eschatologically apocalyptic, one that's kind of like end times kind of stuff with demons in it and stuff, but basically takes place in modern times, and then you've got one that takes some people from modern times into a fantasy-style world. And that's what we talked about last time, was Crown of Vengeance, which was the first fantasy novel, and Storm Guardians is the second end times type novel, so you're alternating between the two?
Yeah. It's kind of almost like a leapfrog release style, where about every 7 months we have a new book coming out, and for instance, the next book out will be the next Fires in Eden book, the sequel to Crown of Vengeance, and this one being the second in the Rising Dawn saga, you can look forward to hopefully by early summer of 2011, the third book in this series. So roughly just a little bit over a year, you'll see a new title out in each series.
Well, that's pretty good, actually. It's actually pretty fast, considering how big they are. I mean, these books, for those of you who haven't seen one of Stephen's books, they're pretty thick.
Yes, I know. Some people use the term tree killer, but I prefer to use the term epic. So,
tree killer and epic. Okay. Well,
moot. If you have a Kindle version, the point is moot.
Right. Well, actually, that kind of leads into something I was going to ask about right there on your website, which is stephenzimmer.com, and that's Stephen with a PH, folks. It's STEPHENZIMMER, stephenzimmer.com. Right at the top of your page, it talks about ebooks and Kindles and stuff like that. So what, since this is like just the newest thing and all kinds of people have their predictions as to how this is going to go and how quick it's going to take off. I mean, what has been your experience, or what's your opinion with the whole new paradigm of e-books and, you know, digital paperless books and stuff like that?
Ideally, if I got my wish, I would see both formats survive, e-books and paper books. I truly love, you know, the printed format. I think there's a place for it, and the printed format supports a great community infrastructure. All your local bookstores and booksellers and people that gather at book clubs that are held at bookstores, libraries. I mean, there's so much that the paper format supports in terms of people who are passionate about books. I really hope that, you know, that there's enough that sell that, you know, it survives. But obviously, you know, the e-books are here to stay, and it's just a matter of, you know, how much of a market they eventually, you know, claim. And I think it'll be a fairly significant chunk. I think that, you know, and I do see a lot of, I have several readers that have actually gotten both the print versions and a Kindle version that they travel with, and then they have a print version they keep at their home library. So some people buy both. But I do see with, especially with the iBook store, I think with Apple entering things with the model that's kind of, you know, after iTunes and so forth, I think it's really going to give a real push to e-books. And I think Kindle's been brilliant about making their, you know, format accessible to various types of, you know, digital devices, you know, from Droids to, you know, iPhones to things like that. I think Kindle's been real smart about that. And so just, you know, just a matter of, you know, how it shakes out and which formats eventually, you know, sustain themselves.
Right, but this, but there's no, I mean, I would think at first blush here that there'd be, if I'm a if I am a business owner and if I own a bookstore, then I'm not really, if, let's say, I want to sell Stephen Zimmer books out of my store. I can order Stephen Zimmer books, I can put them on my shelves, I can have people come in and give me money for Stephen Zimmer books because it's my store, and I can, you know, actually sell the, if you, you know, dead tree material, if you want to put it that way, out of my store. But if I own a bookstore, and if people buy your books, you know, if people buy your books electronically, then if I own a brick and mortar store, I'm not getting anything from that. You know, so there's not any resentment or any backlash or anything like that?
Not that I've seen yet. I mean, it's definitely, it's, you know, it's a concern because it's definitely, you can see the effect it's had in the music world, where you've seen all kinds of record store chains kind of dry up, and independent record stores have really struggled as people have been buying more music digitally. I think books are very different in a lot of ways. I think, you know, it's very much more, you know, it's not as casual of a medium. It's something you really have to dedicate your attention to. And so I think it's different. So I'm not saying it's going to follow the same path. But so far, I don't see a, you know, a real reticence yet. I do think it's coming because, I mean, like I said, you know, there is a, you know, more economical, you know, to get an ebook. But then again, you know, like me, I like to have something to show for my money when I spend, you know, what little money I have. So, you know, I definitely like to have physical books. I like to get them signed. I like to have bookstores to go to talk to, you know, the local sci-fi fantasy experts. You know, there's so many things about bookstores and the culture that is around bookstores that, you know, that I really value. And so, you know, I've always made myself available as much as I can to bookstores. I mean, as a matter of fact, during Gen Con weekend, I'm going to be at the Borders downtown doing a return book signing. So, I mean, you know, every chance I get, you know, I'm trying to support bookstores, libraries. I donate as many, you know, books as I can to libraries, as many as I can scrape together. So, you know, I'm definitely rooting for the print format to have its place. But, you know, I'm not averse to ebooks, and, you know, and I think they're great. They have their pros and cons too. And I think that, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, who wins the battle, the reader, the, you know, the e-readers right now.
Okay. Yeah, I can kind of see that. Oh, and that reminds me, I'll have to make sure that I check in and see you, at Gen Con there in Indianapolis, since I'll just be a couple blocks away at the Gen Con Convention Center. So that sounds sounds like some good times to catch up, have some dinner or something.
I'll be looking out for people wearing purple hats with purple ears. Yes, definitely.
Yeah,
they seem to be taking over conventions lately. But
yeah, there might be a few of those.
And DuckCon, by the third day, I've seen them everywhere. It's a phenomenon, I tell you.
It's something anyway. I don't know if phenomenon's the right word. But yeah, one of these days we have to get way into one of those purple hats.
Absolutely.
Now, how are you doing, Wei? Can you hear us? I know we're having some technical issues, but I know you're still there.
You're clearer now. I can kind of partly hear you.
Okay. All right. Well, now hopefully, folks, we've got, you know, we've got Wei's technical issues worked out. So here's what we can do. With Wei tonight, because Wei has never actually read any of Stephen's books. So here's what I'm going to ask Stephen to do, you know, because those of us who go to conventions, a lot of us are gamers, where we understand the concept of role play or even cosplay. So we're going to pretend, we're going to actually do something we've never been able to do here without a co-host. We're going to actually do a little role play here, and we're going to pretend that Wei is a convention person. And Stephen is at his table, and he's pitching his books. And this way, instead of just me asking like I normally would, well, Stephen, what can you tell us about your books? you know, we can act, maybe we can make this a little more lively here. So, Wei, can you see his website, thestephensimmer.com?
Yes.
Okay, so that's some of the art that you would see if you were walking by his table, which is fantastic, and it's something else I want to talk to before time gets away from us. Because we're going to talk tonight, folks, the format kind of goes like this. We're going to finish talking with, well, I don't know if we'll ever finish, but we'll talk with Steve about his books for a while. Then we'll do our commercial break from our sponsors, and then we're going to talk to Stephen again when we come back from the commercial about movies. Because one of the things that we haven't touched on yet is Stephen is an independent movie maker, and he's definitely got a lot to talk about with that as well. But let's go ahead and let's pretend Wei's coming by the Stephen's table here, and Stephen is, you know, you see someone who probably reads books. You know, she's an intelligent-looking young lady, you know, at a convention, and she's looking at your books. What do you say? How do you pitch your books? What's your elevator pitch, or what's your pitch if somebody goes by your table?
Well, I've never imagined that I'm too pushy, so I don't try to, like, do a hard sell. But I do, you know, invite people to come over, and the one thing I do tell them is that, you know, primarily I am epic fantasy, and because my Rising Dawn saga is epic urban fantasy, and, you know, the other series being more, you know, of your pure, you know, medieval-type epic fantasy. And, you know, and I would sometimes, you know, ask them if they read things like, you know, like George R. R. Martin being, you know, one example I use, because the way that his books are organized is not dissimilar to how mine are organized in terms of you have multiple character threads. You know, I have ensemble, very much of an ensemble type cast in each story, and, you know, each book typically follows about 7 or 8 main threads. And so, you know, I'll try to, you know, very politely, you know, feel out, you know, what kind of reader they are, if they like, you know, immersive, you know, it's not, my stuff isn't light reading. It's, you know, I admit it, it's very immersive. It's something you really have to, you know, dive into. But if you like that kind of stuff, it's got all the depth and layers and, you know, all kinds of twists and turns and a slew of creatures and environments. And, you know, and so, and I've had a number of people even remark to me that make it, you know, a good game topic, you know, as far as playing within those worlds.
Okay, so let's go ahead and play this out then. So, okay, so Wei, let's say Steve just asked you what kind of things you read. I mean, what do you read? What are you into?
Definitely sci-fi. I like a lot of action, a lot of, like, adventure, definitely.
Okay, if you like a lot of action and adventure and sci-fi, I would probably talk to you more about the Rising Dawn saga, because it is more of a, it's set in the modern day. It has a lot of techno-thriller-type elements woven into it and some sci-fi elements. There is a lot of technology. There's a lot of military technology. There's definitely a lot of action, especially once you're into the Storm Guardians. It's a very, very heavy action-oriented book. You know, it's got, you know, obviously being urban fantasy, it's got a heavy paranormal and supernatural aspect, so it's not hard science fiction, but you know, there was a lot of military hardware research that went into it. You know, a lot of things that take place, you know, involve thriller kind of elements. And so, you know, so that's probably what I would probably want to talk to Wei about, in terms of, you know, which of my series would, you know, maybe appeal more to her.
I understand a lot of your books are really thick, like you mentioned before. For readers that are not too crazy about reading, which one would you, like, suggest to them for, like, easier reading, if there's such thing?
Unfortunately, I can't, because they're both immersive, they're both very similar in structure. I, you know, if you're looking for a light read, I'm probably not the right author in terms of those two series, but I also am, you know, starting to get in to more into, you know, some short story stuff. I am working on some smaller, I guess you'd call them smaller novels. And so hopefully in the next couple of years, I will have some things out that are probably, you know, lighter reading. I will mention that my very first steampunk short story called In the Mountain Skies just came out on Kurlak Publishing's Dreams of Steam anthology. And your guest next week, Nick Valentino, who I think he's a friend of mine, great author, great guy, and he's a steampunk expert, and he's also in that as well as many other good writers like Angelia Sparrow and several others. So if you weren't into the real thick kind of stuff, I probably would even talk to you about that, my short story, in Dreams of Steam or something like that, because that's more of a linear, very straightforward type of tale.
I noticed that on your website you have a YouTube trailer for The Crown of Vengeance.
Yes.
How did you get that started? Like, what inspired you to do that?
Well, being a filmmaker, I definitely want to have trailers, and that's something I think that I need a few more of, to be honest, and then we're going to be addressing that pretty soon. But I have a slew of artwork that was done for all three novels. I work in collaboration with Matthew Perry, who's a great fantasy artist, when it comes time for each book release, and he did, together, throughout all three books, he's already done 40 full-page illustrations and the three cover arts. And so we've had a lot of artwork to work with, and so it was really not a big jump to look at all that artwork and be able to construct a trailer that had some really nice little visual representations of things in the book. It wasn't just text going across the screen. It showed some of the visual representations of creatures and characters, and gives a nice little feel for what Crown of Vengeance is about. So that's what the trailer is, and I hope like I said, we're going to have a few more produced very shortly.
Definitely, the artwork is really really amazing. Can you repeat his name again for me?
It's Matthew Perry, and no, it's not the guy that was the actor in Friends, but he gets that a lot. But no, he's a fantasy and horror artist, and he's also a special effects artist in independent film, and he loves doing these projects, and so he's going to be doing the next book in Fires in Eden, and as far as he's concerned, he's on board for the long haul. His future books come out.
How many books are planned in the series?
Right now, the way that my editor, Amanda DeBoard, has been kind of divvying them up based on the material I have now, we're looking at probably about 7 books, give or take one in each series. So one of them may be as many as 8, but most likely around 7.
Actually, I have a question. Like I said, I'm going through your website right now, and I was wondering, your bio said you're from Denver. How do you get to Kentucky?
Okay. Well, I was born in Denver, Colorado. So, yeah, I'm definitely have a route there for sure. But most of my life I did live in Lexington because my dad was a cutting-edge cancer researcher. He actually one of his main proteges is based out of Indianapolis, interestingly enough. And he may actually come down and say hi to me during the Borders visit next week. But my dad moved us to to Lexington so that he could take up a professorship at the University of Kentucky and pursue a really cutting edge kind of visionary style of cancer research, which is really paying a lot of dividends in ovarian, breast, and some other forms of cancer right now. And unfortunately, my dad passed away a couple of years ago. But his research has really grown onward, and that's what brought me to Kentucky.
Well, it looks like time is kind of catching me here. Sorry about that, Steve. I hope I didn't cut you off. It's about halfway through. And for those of you who I know that when Steve appeared on our show on back on March 25th. I know we got some new fans because I got feedback. We had, Steven Zimmer's a genius, So, so I know there were some new fans ordering his books. So if you want to get into Steven Zimmer, if you want to know how to get a hold of this guy, or just check out his website and see some of the art and stuff that we're talking about here, it's StephenZimmer.com, StephenZimmer.com. And we've got one little housekeeping thing here, and we're going to go to our commercial break. For a little housekeeping issue, we have received some feedback from the listening audience out there at Dragon Talk Radio. Some people have made a comment from time to time that it would be easier or more convenient or more conducive to them actually calling into the show, because we are a call-in show. If you want to interact with Ask Steve or me or Wayne question tonight, the call-in number is 646-378-1593, or you can go to dragontalkradio.com. And for the second half of the show, when we're going to have kind of a Q&A about movie making with Steve, I'm opening the chat room right now. It is a live interactive show, but we've gotten some feedback sometimes from people who said that after 9, we moved recently to 8 p.m. So we were at 9 p.m. And we got feedback that said, hey, after 9 p.m., that's when people's cell phone minutes become free. And I can definitely relate to that. That sounds like a good reason to me. So starting next week, we're going to be moving back to 9 p.m. By popular demand, because, you know, the audience has spoken. They've said they'd like to call in, but they'd like to call in after their minutes are free. So we are definitely people pleasers here at Dragon Talk Radio, your convention connection. So, because conventions should be fun and they should be convenient. But I'm dumb. Sorry. Okay. That was my one gratuitous bad pun. I'll try to keep those down to like one a week or so at least. Anyway, moving right along. The our show this week is sponsored by GEA, the Gaming and Entertainment Agency. The Gaming and Entertainment Agency has a once a month mini convention in the St. Louis area. They're having a July Game Day on July 31st, so I guess it's actually the last day that you can call it July Game Day. So July Game Day will be on July 31st at the Crestwood Courts Mall in Crestwood, Missouri. You can find out about that at gameclubhq.com. There'll be all kinds of gaming, role-playing games, miniatures games, just all kinds of games, board games, card games. It'll be the Yeti Games location in the Crestwood Courts Mall. GEA has gaming for people who like to play, people who are into role-playing games and want a game master. There's definitely warm bodies to have around your table and roll dice, and you can kill their characters. did I say kill their characters? I meant entertain them with your storytelling skills. or if you run a convention, the GEA helps run game rooms at conventions. They ran the game room at Comic-Con 2010. They'll be back for Comic-Con 2011. They also assisted with game room activities for QuinnCon 25 and for Anime St. Louis 2010. So if you run a convention and you are looking for someone to have it covered for you, that's actually their slogan, the GEA, we've got it covered, and you're looking for someone to get that game room covered for you, you can find them at gameclubhq.com or just come down this Saturday and meet them. They're just a great, great bunch of folks. Good times to be had. We are also sponsored this week by Way of the Sword. You can find out about Way of the Sword at unclesamurai.com. Way of the Sword features a battle sport. Now, what is a battle sport? Well, battle sport involves learning fighting techniques with historical weapons and armor, but without the historical weapons and armor. Full-sized replicas of katanas, wakizashis, and breastplates are made of materials like plastic, foam, and other components to maximize safety. You may have seen battle sport at some conventions yourself. If you'd like to check out an exciting nationwide Japanese-style battle sport group, visit UncleSamurai.com. The Sakura Moon Empire, which is the Missouri group of Way of the Sword, is recruiting warriors, artisans, and people who would just like an immersive medieval Japanese experience for fellowship, for training in the fighting arts, and for fun. They're recruiting. They are looking for people to. And if you're not necessarily into the fighting, they're into all sorts of medieval Japanese craft as well. So if you're into that sort of thing and you'd like to hang around people of like minds who appreciate that type of environment, that type of cultural aspect, then check them out. You can find contact information at unclesamurai.com. Okay. Now we're back, folks. And this time we were with Stephen Zimmer. Before the commercial, we talked to him about his books. He's got two series, a fantasy series and an end times action kind of series. He's got a new book out. You can find out more about him in our archive here at Dragon Talk Radio, your convention connection. He's on the March 25th episode. But we've also got him here tonight. So if you're listening live, if you're not downloading, and if you want to join our chat room at DragonTalkRadio.com, or if you want to call in at 646-378-1593, you can ask us a question, either me or Stephen or our gorgeous co-host, Wei He, and we are here to handle your questions. And we're, after the commercial break here, we're talking to Stephen about movies. He's also, in addition to a compelling author, writes books that just suck people in. I know I have to resist. His books are so thick. My life is so busy. If this was like the old days when I was in school and I could just, you know, devote myself to the book and just disappear into that world, I would. But I have to pry myself out of his books, folks. I mean, I just have to because I've got you know, duties and responsibilities. But the books will suck you in like quicksand. They're very, very immersive. So if you but Stephen is also into movies. And what we're kind of going to get into now, at this past DuckCon, Stephen did a track of programming for screenplay writing, and it was just fabulous. He really – it was like getting a little college course. I mean, I realize people did kind of pay for it because they paid for their badge for the con, but, I mean, the information that you got really – I mean, people would have paid to take a class like that. I mean, really. So, Stephen, how long have you been making movies and stuff?
Oh, as far as making movies, I mean, if you want to count piddling around at the end of high school and, you know, in terms of doing some little video projects, I mean, I've been, you know, doing stuff probably about a good 20 years, just about, and pretty close to that. And, but, you know, seriously, it's been the last about 10 to 15 years that I've really been, you know, doing things with better production value and, you know, more of a focus on, you know, the, you know, doing things correctly. And so it's been probably the last decade that things have really kind of hit stride.
For working so long in it, do you have a degree in it?
My degree is in visual communications from Hardin-Simmons University, and which is kind of a blend of everything from videography to photojournalism to visual kind of mediums. So I didn't have a strict, you know, film degree, but I did, my degree did pertain, you know, to, you know, some, a lot of stuff like, you know, that I'm dealing with today.
Okay. Well, what are you working on right now, Steve?
I'm working on right now, I'm kind of excited about, well, not kind of, I am excited about it, but it's, the short film is called Sword Bearer, and it is a medieval fantasy short film. It's the first, medieval fantasy genre film project that I've been able to do as a director, based on fabulous material. H. David Blaylock, his book Ascendant, is the basis for what's in this short film. And basically, David found a way to take one of the iconic sequences in Swordbearer and kind of bookend it to make a very tight like short film. And we are going to shooting that in Central Kentucky in August and September. And we've just gotten done, you know, doing some of the last rounds of casting auditions, and things are in full motion for it. But it's going to be a very, very nice, nice project. And like I said, based on great author's work, with David Blaylock and the Ascendant novel. And, but yeah, that's right around the corner.
Now the Ascendant novels, that's pretty thick too, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And, I'm going to describe it my way, you know, as far as how I see it. But those that love the kind of dynamics of different family houses and like the Dune series, or maybe the Westeros and George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series, they will love David's series because it's got all that kind of Byzantine-like dynamics between, you know, rival houses and ally houses and things like that. And then also, it's got all the goods of, like, epic fantasy. I mean, he's got, like, you know, almost dwarven and elven-type races, and then some, you know, it's got some dragon elements and, you know, things like that, and epic-scale battles, and, I mean, lots and lots of stuff, you know, to appeal to fantasy lovers. And so if you like, you know, those kind of the things of intrigue, kind of side by side with, you know, some real epic scale kind of, you know, fantasy. I mean, it's a really, really good novel. And I know his next one in the series, Emperor, is coming out this fall on Sam's Dot Publishing. So it's one that if you get into it, there's a new one coming out right around the corner.
Well, that's great, because I know there's a, when you read a series, as it comes out and you have to wait between volumes, then sometimes you can feel jealous later when new fans come along later and they can just go book to book to book to book and they don't have to wait like you did.
Right, yeah. But
so now this kind of gets me into kind of what I know we're getting just a little bit short on time, but I want to make sure that people are able to tap into the rich, just the richness that you have to share here in terms of knowledge, because I was like a sponge just soaking that stuff up at DuckCon, because you started pointing out the very first seminar I attended just stuff that it just seems silly to me now that I can't believe I didn't get that. But I mean, I write novels, I write short stories, but you pointed out that the difference between writing a screenplay or what it takes to adapt a novel into a screenplay, a lot of writers don't necessarily think about, because they're used to writing, you know, prose. They're used to writing, you know, the novel, the short story, you know, the stuff like that. And then screenplays they're like a totally different animal, totally different critter, and people don't even realize it. So can you share with us a little bit about, you know, some of the points that you we're getting across there at DuckCon, because it was just really good stuff.
Well, just, you know, since we're short on time, I'll try to condense as much as I can. But a screenplay is the blueprint. It's not the end result, as like a novel or a poem or something like that is. It is the blueprint for what the final product, for lack of a better word, is in terms of the film. And it's going to be affected along the way, because film is a collaborative medium. So your screenplay is going to have things affected in it based on lots of different things. The director, some cast, art department, a lot of different people are going to put their stamp on it by the time that it actually gets shot. And the important thing for a screenwriter, especially one coming from prose, has to understand is the production process, is to understand, you know, what the director's role is, and is to understand, what needs to be in that blueprint and nothing more. It's a very minimalist type of writing. It drops a lot of description that you would find in novels. You've got to show, you can't tell, you can't go inside, you know, and tell how somebody is feeling. You've got to show how they're feeling. You can't go tell them what they're thinking. You have to find ways to show. And so it is a very, very different animal than writing, you know, prose or poetry and things like that. And I think it's important for anyone to tackle, you know, that's tackling screenwriting, is to get an understanding of the production process. Because one of the things that you get tempted to do when writing screenplays is you get tempted to be the director as well. And that's fine if you are going to direct your own screenplay. You might have a little bit more into it. But if you're trying to, you know, sell a screenplay or get it to a production company or something like that, you want to kind of extract the things that the director are the director's domain. In other words, you don't want to give too much direction in what they call parentheticals. When you're reading dialogue and you see the character name and the dialogue underneath, sometimes in between the character name and the dialogue, you'll see a little thing in parentheses that'll say, like, angrily or rolled his eyes or some kind of little directive type of thing. You want to try to minimize a lot of that. You want to try to take out the things that the director is going to put into it when the director takes the screenplay and goes on with it. And so you have to be conscious of that if you're writing for a market or if you're writing to sell to a production company. So it's very minimalist. It's very important to understand the production process and not to both director and screenwriter if you're trying to, you know, sell the screenplay to somebody else, and then to understand that it is a blueprint and it is going to be affected by a lot of things before it finally, you know, gets shot. And I think those are probably some of the key things to keep in mind when you're a writer of other types of writing approaching, like adaptations and so forth.
Okay, so when you say that everybody along the way, and that's kind of what you were also saying at Duck, I just want to make sure I shared with my audience here on DTR, but when you say everybody along the way has some kind of input as to how things go, I'm thinking about Wei here, that we have, you know, the costume queen. Do you mean everybody has some kind of an effect? You know, like, does that mean even the costuming person has some input into the, you know, leads to their fingerprint on the final product?
Oh, certainly, because it's, you know, the screenwriter should definitely not, you know, try to, you know, put in every little costume detail or attire. You know, that's definitely the thing, something that you want to leave to, you know, a costume designer. You don't want to try to take on all those kind of jobs. Those are things that like Wei would come into a project and that's what she, you know, that's her role for, you know, a feature film or a short film. And that is one of the sort of things that you don't want to, you know, I mean, that's okay to have a few specifics when it's key, you know, about a certain, you know, maybe a guy has a certain type of sword, or, you know, and it's very specific to the story, or you just want to make a reference that, you know, these guys have chainmail instead of, you know, something, you know, plate armor or something like that. You know, a few references are okay, but you definitely want to let the other people do their jobs. And so, like, you know, in terms of referring to Wei, I mean, you definitely want to let somebody like her do, you know, her job as a costumer, and you don't want to try, you know, and often if you try to put too much in a screenplay, they're going to go in and do their own thing anyway when it comes to, you know, a lot of design elements and you know, production side things. So, you know, you might as well leave that kind of sparse.
Actually, since John is in some other costume, like, do a quick costume designer side. Costume designers are, like, we are required to understand how a character works. So we will actually be assigned to a script, to the play, and we have to read through it and understand a character's actions, how they react to things, their personality, and how they would dress. And, of course, that has to run through the producer and whatnot. And if the producer doesn't like it, costume designer has to redraw everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you've just... You know, but as you're saying, you know, that's already progressed past the screenwriter's, you know, position. I mean, it's definitely into a mode where other people are, you know, putting in their elements into the production. And that's the key thing for the screenwriter to keep in mind, is that there are other people that are going to be bringing their elements into it as it goes along.
Definitely. Now, okay, now just since Wei's our captive audience here, Now one of the things that I know that you've done lately, Wei, is you have gotten into costumes for conventions, and you've gotten noticed for them a lot that aren't necessarily anime characters from the anime cartoons, but you've been actually branching out and doing, like, video games and stuff and doing different characters, and you've been getting a lot of notoriety for that. Have you had a chance to look at, to kind of tie this into what Steve's talking about, have you had a chance to design a character from the ground up? Instead of looking at a character that already has a whole bunch of anime, that already has a whole bunch of DVDs out, or you know, people already have an expectation and the look is established, have you had a chance to like invent a character or interpret a character your own Wei?
Actually, I have not. I have not made my own original yet, but I am looking into making a new steampunk whenever I do attend a steampunk convention, of course. But no, actually, currently, besides branching out from anime to video games, I've been approaching more of an artwork version of anime and video games.
Okay. So Steven, since we're talking about, you know, developing these three-dimensional characters, I mean, as an author... you know, we've talked before about on the show a lot about designing characters as an author, like if I sit back and design a new character for the Smurdiverse, like my books, but is it different? Or maybe it's not different. Is there a difference in designing a character for a three-dimensional screenplay as opposed to, like, if I make up a character for my book, a real actor may never put on that costume. You know, if you're writing something that from the start is supposed to be portrayed by a real actor, is there a difference in how you conceive of that character as a...
I don't, to be honest with you. I mean, I still approach it, you know, with the same kind of approach to, you know, like envisioning a character as I would, you know, a book in terms of, you know, just get, you know, having an idea of, you know, the character's backstory and, you know, different elements about their personality and so forth. And I try to have that in hand, even though the way it gets represented, you know, in a screenplay versus a novel is different. And, you know, and obviously there's a lot that you can't write into a screenplay. I still try to have the same understanding of character when I am going into it, just so, you know, some subtle things hopefully work their way into it.
Okay, now what kind of time are we talking about? Like, we mentioned that, you know, in spite of how thick your novels are, you're cranking them out at like one every 7 months, you said. In comparison to that, how big of a project is, you know, like Mr. Blaylock's book, which Mr. Blaylock was, of course, a few weeks ago, he was on Dragon Talk Radio as part of a panel representing a Magicopter and stuff. People can actually see his book on our website and go back and listen to some comments that he made if they want to in our archives. But so I just want to make sure we got him plugged. But in terms of making, you know, like how long does something like this take?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously when you're doing a short film and it's more of an indie type project where you're dealing with, well, obviously a big pile of money, sometimes it takes a little bit longer than normally would if you could shoot everything all together, you know, because we got to break up shoots between a few weekends because, you know, we have a large number of, you know, people that are, you know, almost, you know, well, for lack of a better word, you know, working volunteer positions and so forth. So we have to skew it out a little bit longer than it normally would. So, you know, in terms of the process, you know, we'll probably be done with shooting and we'll be into post-production by October and probably before Christmas have a cut of this short film available. But, you know, if we were able to do it, crank it out, you know, to have everybody work on it for a dedicated week, we'd probably be able to shave about a month off of the schedule. So you got to keep that in mind. I mean, as opposed to like Shadow's Light, that took about, you know, it's about a 9-10 month process from pre-production to finish. But we shot over a 6 week period. We shot 35 shooting days out of 42 scheduled days, and so, you know, we got it done in one sequence, and you know, and that definitely cut things, you know, down considerably in terms of the timeline.
Right now. Okay, so that gives me a little bit of perspective on the size of the project here. Now, last time that you were on the show, we talked a little bit about influences as an author. What about your influences as a filmmaker?
My influences as a filmmaker, oddly enough, I mean, this is going to... I mean, I have always liked Peter Jackson's stuff. From his earliest stuff, like, you know, all the Bad Taste and some of the, you know, Meet the Feebles and some of the early stuff he did all the way up through, you know, Frighteners. And then, you know, now stuff like, you know, of course, King Kong, Lovely Bones, Lord of the Rings, he's known for. But I've always just loved his approach, guys like Guillermo del Toro. You know, I love the ones that really are willing to kind of go out of the box and really go fantastical. I do like guys like Edward Zwick. He's the guy who did The Last Samurai, for instance, which is one of my, you know, more favorite films. I do tilt more toward epics and film, just like I do in books. But, you know, I like those, you know, Ridley Scott's another one that I absolutely love, even though I loved Kingdom of Heaven, I think, more than I did the new Robin Hood. But you know, I definitely like, you know, kind of like the Ridley Scott kind of stuff. So I like the you know, the big epical, historically, you know, stuff that has a little bit of a historical vibe, and then, you know, the stuff that has, you know, big, you know, fantastical type element woven in.
Oh, yeah, well, that's definitely good stuff. So what is it about the way that they approach film, though? That they have certain techniques? Are there certain shots that they like? Do they have a certain storytelling style? And that was another thing that I took copious notes on. Of course, I lost them because I don't keep track of the notes, but I took the notes, so it stayed in my brain better. But at DuckCon was the different shot styles and how to, like, you could film, like, you could have two different people film the exact same scene, because with their styles, they could end up having it feel totally different.
Well, that's actually why I like Ridley Scott and Peter Jackson, for instance, because they can zero in intimately with characters and even pull, like, minor characters out and really make them memorable. Like the David Thewlis character, who's a nice knight hospitaller that's in Kingdom of Heaven, one of the more noble characters I've ever seen on screen. I mean, he really pulled that character out, within the context of this huge movie. And at the same time, when it comes time for the fireworks and gala affair, these guys could, sweep out and have the big bombastic kind of shots and, larger than life kind of epic feel, but they don't lose the ability, to really zero in on characters and stay intimate with characters. They don't get lost. And I think that's something that happens to other directors maybe a little bit more, where guys like, I think, Ridley Scott and Peter Jackson, they walk that fine line of keeping that personal connection to characters and minor characters specifically without becoming, too lost. But at the same time, they can deliver the goods when it comes to the big scenes. And that's kind of what draws me, I think, a lot to those guys.
I can appreciate that. That sounds like the... It's different, but it sounds like the same kind of thing that makes for a good epic author, as opposed to somebody, like you said, they get kind of lost. Where they have this big giant universe filled with all kinds of detail and cultures and knowledge and countries and background and this big giant map of their world, but you kind of need to keep sense of the scope of the universe in balance with, on the personal level, what's happening with the characters.
Right.
And I think you can also go wrong in the other direction as well, and you can totally miss how cool this world or universe was because the reader stayed next to these characters, holding the characters' hands and hearing every one of these characters' thoughts, and they never really got to see the breadth or the scope of that fantasy universe either. So I think you've got a really strong point there that the two have to be in balance if you're going to really present what was there.
I think so, yeah.
All right, well, it looks like we are just about to the end of another show, so this means that you need to come up with more books and films so we can have you on again.
We're always working, don't you worry. We will be working hard to deliver on that end, and I don't think it'll be too much longer. Probably right around December, we should have the next Fires and Eden book out, and we should have the first cut of Swordbearer, so we'll have some stuff ready.
Excellent, and I will see you next week in Indianapolis around Gen Con, and I know you'll be able to see Wei at Archon, because, if Wei is not at Archon, the Archon people, they have riots, and it gets to be pretty ugly. Wei has a lot of fans at Archon.
Well, I'm looking forward to it because her work is just great. So, I mean, I'm really excited about it. Because I think I briefly, like for 2 seconds, met Wei like last year. And so I'm actually looking forward to getting to meet you this time and for a more extended visit.
Definitely. I'm really excited for Archon this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of my favorites. I mean, already I've been to one and it was just fantastic.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show again, Steve. And this is John Clement and
Wei.
And we are signing off for another week of Dragon Talk Radio. And next week, we will be talking to you live from Gen Con.